Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why are so many men coaching so many women's teams? Didn't used to be that way. In fact, here's a paradox that I think is going to surprise you. Before Title IX in the early 70s, women had 90% of the top coaching jobs for women's teams. After Title IX, when the money started flowing in and the salaries went up, you guessed it, men wanted those jobs and men got those jobs. So what difference does it make if a woman coaches a women's team? Notre Dame women's basketball coach Muffet McGraw thinks it makes a big difference. Here she is in April.
When you look at men's basketball and 99% of the jobs go to men, why shouldn't 100 or 99% of the jobs in women's basketball go to women? Maybe it's because we only have 10% women athletic directors in Division I. People hire people who look like them. And that's the problem.
So today, why it matters that women coach women, and men for that matter, two guests and your view on this. If you were a female athlete or you have a daughter who is in high school or college team, does it matter to you if a woman leads that team? By the way, let's not just make it high school or college. Let's make it all the way down to these beginning sports that girls are playing. Does it matter to you that your daughter, or for that matter, your experience with this, that you were coached by a woman all the way through, at the lower level, at the high school level, at collegiate and beyond? And do you think more women should coach collegiate and professional men's teams? I'd love to have your view on that. So give me the experience within your family and what kinds of decisions and thoughts you've come to about this, and also broaden that and think about whether more women ought to be coaching men's professional and collegiate teams. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Mary Jo Kane is with us, director of the Tucker Center for Research for Girls and Women's Sport at the U of M, and with me in the studio. Welcome. Always good to have you here.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Danielle O'Banion is with us. She's an assistant coach for the Golden Gophers women's basketball team. She's a former head coach at Kent State. Welcome. Good to have you here, Danielle. Thanks for coming.
Good morning.
Mary Jo, those Title IX coaching numbers come from your center's research, and I want to dig into them a little more. As I said, this is a real paradox. Title IX comes in 1972. Remind us about how the coaching landscape looked back then.
Well, there were certainly not very many teams and certainly not any sort of organizational teams and conferences like we have today. And so you had a situation where a coach would be a coach, in quotation marks, would be a woman physical educator who typically would volunteer to coach a team. And they would literally have bake sales to raise money.
Wow.
To pile into a station wagon and sleep six to a hotel room. Because there was no money in it, and so it was just really a labor of love for those women back then. And again, they did it usually maybe for, what, $1,000 a year extra, because it wasn't big time. And then Title IX changed all that.
Boy, this is really good to be reminded of what this was like. I forgot that.
Yep.
This seems like it has been Title IX land for a long time. What changed? What was the immediate change after Title IX was passed?
Well, I think the immediate change was that many schools initially resisted having to do this. And because Title IX was a federal law, a lot of schools used Title IX as a big stick to sue. And then once it became clear that women's sports was here to stay, rather than defeat them, the idea for men's sports, or certainly for those people who cared about sports in general, especially at the collegiate level, was if you can't beat them, join them. And then over time, we had young women athletes who I'm a pre-Title IX tomboy. And so any sort of sporting activity I just thought was a wonderful thing. Young women today who grow up with a sense of entitlement to sports, which is...
is that Danielle?
Yeah. Well, student athletes that she has today. We went from, prior to Title IX, young girls hoping that there is a team, to today, young girls hoping that they make the team. And for the first time ever, we have young women growing up today with a sense of entitlement to sports, and they do not take no for an answer. And by the way, neither do their parents, who want them to go to college on a scholarship.
So, Danielle, does that describe you? The sense of entitlement in the best sense of the word.
Right.
It is that way, fortunately. And I'm really grateful as an athlete and now as a woman that works in athletics that there were some pioneers that did laundry, drove the vans, any number of other tasks to let this be a business now and then have us be as presumptuous to think that it's our right to have organized athletics for women.
What was your experience with this? I'm curious. As you were a basketball player too before you became a coach.
Yes.
So take me through the rites of passage here with your sports life.
Well, what's interesting about my journey is that I started playing basketball when I was 7, and one of my after school teachers, Coach Kip, was an interesting young guy. He started a girls' basketball team because there wasn't one at our school.
Ah.
And so my athletics experiences included basketball, soccer, bowling, tennis.
Boy, you are an all-around good athlete.
Well,
huh?
I just, you know what, my parents let me stay engaged, and it really was one of the best ways to build confidence and social skills and leadership abilities. And that's the reason why I really feel strongly about doing this work, in quotation marks, of using sports as a method to teach life skills.
So you played basketball in high school and college.
I did.
Okay. And at that point, were you coached mostly by men or mostly by women?
I was coached mostly by males.
Really?
I was. I had two high school teachers that were women coaches, but my summer basketball coaches were males. So the AAU or club coaches were males in my experience. My college head coach was a woman. And I've been working with women as head coaches for my entire career. Coincidentally.
So, Mary Jo, was the expectation when the money started coming in and the opportunities opened up that women just weren't going to be on the courts and the fields, but they were also going to be, you know, coaching these teams and running the show? And what has happened? What's the reality of it?
Well, many of the early pioneers who were in an organization called the AIAW, which was the Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women prior to Title IX, warned that with Title IX, I mean, they were mixed because on the one hand, they wanted to have more and more opportunities, and a federal law, as I said, gave people a big stick to sue. But they were also concerned that the other thing that happened around this time was that we used to have separate physical education departments or separate athletic departments. And one of the things that happened, and this happened at the University of Minnesota, we were one of the last to merge, that the two units merged. And guess who became the athletic director, and guess who became the associate athletic director?
The men who'd been running their athletic programs,
right?
They took the top jobs?
Exactly. They did take the top jobs, even though in many cases they were less qualified. And so as Muffet McGraw said, because the vast majority of athletic directors, especially at the Division I level with a big-time football team, are male, they tend to hire people who, as Muffet McGraw said, look like themselves, because I don't think there's any necessarily conspiracy theory. You're just more comfortable with that. So one of the arguments that we have made at the Tucker Center, and Danny and I were talking about this before coming in, that unless you have a male athletic director who is an ally, who understands what the issue is and is committed to reaching out to bringing women in, not because it's the politically correct thing to do or because it's the feel-good thing to do, but because adding women to the staff is a value-added component of what needs to happen. Because if you think about it, Carrie, prior to Title IX, the pool of qualified women to be head coaches wasn't all that big because they were people like me who never had any formal playing experience,
right,
let alone training,
nutrition.
Where would
you get your experience?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But now, because of Title IX, you have young women all over this country who are eminently more qualified because they grow up with sports, they have access to facilities and training and coaching and nutrition, and yet they're just simply not getting hired.
Let me take a call here. If you've just gotten in on the show, we're talking about kind of the unusual or surprising paradox that has followed Title IX. We're giving some of the reasons for that paradox, but Title IX opened up a lot of opportunities for playing and for coaching for women. But what has happened now, and some of this research comes right out of the Tucker Center at the U of M, is that many men are taking those top coaching jobs. And by the way, the assistant coaching jobs, I saw this from the research, women hold only 49% of all assistant coaching jobs in women's sport. Men are, with the higher salaries and the opened opportunity, men are often moving into those top coaching jobs. We're here to talk about what that means, why more women ought to be in these top jobs. And I want to know from you, if you were a female athlete, you have a daughter who is in a high school or college team, does it matter to you if a woman leads, coaches that team? And do you think more women ought to be coaching collegiate and professional men's teams too? Why is that off the table? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR to Roger in Rochester. Hey, Roger. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah. My daughter, I coached my three boys and my daughter in basketball from the time they were about second and third grade. And I see a lot of high school coaches coaching the girls. And I was up at the state tournament this year, and I saw a lot of male coaches. My feeling is if a woman is a better coach than the man, absolutely hire the better qualified person for the job. And I include college football. If we could get a better coach than P.J. Fleck at the U, I'd be all for it to have a winning team.
That's another show, my friend, but I hear you. Okay.
I know. So I still think hire the most qualified.
Yeah.
Because women, I can tell you, I've watched the U of M girls basketball team, very exciting, and I find that more enjoyable than the men. So hire the most qualified.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Danielle first on this. That sounds great if the playing field was equal. What's your thought on Roger's argument here? Just get the best.
I would tend to agree with Roger's perspective. Just get the best, because I've benefited from male and female coaches. I think our game grows from contributions from any gender, quite candidly. But to Mary Jo's point, we hire what we know and we hire what we're comfortable with. And so right now, because of the statistics, who's doing the hiring, they don't look like women by and large. There are fewer opportunities to go out and get the best because there's also a lack of awareness of who the qualified women are.
Ah. Meaning, I just don't have the network to know who's out there and who is qualified for this, which women have the skills for this, right? Yes?
Yeah, women have the skills. And also what we try to do at the Tucker Center is to get data on how many women actually apply when there is a job opening.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of those studies, as I shared with you, Carrie, we asked, meaning my co-author, Nicole Lavoie, and I asked all Division I athletic directors, male and female, although there are many fewer females, to tell, didn't matter whether they were right or wrong, but just give us their perception of why there were so few women in head coaching positions in college athletics. And it matters what their perception is, because they're the ones who are responsible for doing the hiring and the firing. And what we found were very significant gender differences, where the male athletic directors tended to say the reason women aren't getting hired is because they're not as qualified, even though there are no hard data to show that to be true. They don't apply for jobs. We don't have strong data on that. Because of HIPAA rules, et cetera. They have more pressures due to time constraints and family obligations. So they tended to blame it on individual women.
So just again, to be clear, these are perceptions not backed up by data. But the problem with the perception is it leads you into making these decisions about hiring.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But what we found that what the women athletic directors said was not the failure of individual women, but there are structural factors at play, like the success of the all-boys network, the failure of the all-girls network, unconscious discrimination. You know, we want to go big time in our athletic program, so we want to bring in a real coach, and a real coach is a male coach. So you have all kinds of gender role stereotypes that get in the mix as well.
Call here from Heather in Minneapolis. Hi, Heather. Thanks for waiting. Appreciate it.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I was a female athlete growing up in middle school and high school. My daughter is now playing basketball. She's transitioning to high school this next year. Mm-hmm. She just had her first female coach last year, and she's always enjoyed playing. She's always had fun playing. The difference I saw between, you know, previous years and this year was she and her teammates, there was a mentality of finally being represented with a female coach. And I think, you know, at the developmental stage of middle school, they're going through quite a lot anyway. But to have at a younger level a female coach early on really made a difference. I saw it made a difference for my daughter and her team. Looking forward to your comments on this. Thanks again for taking my call.
This makes sense, Danielle, in so many ways, including what Mary Jo was alluding to, which is just the experience of seeing a woman do this as a girl, 6, 7, 8, up into middle school and high school.
I've said this before. I think when you are a young girl coached by a woman, it's a permission slip to be a strong, opinionated, capable, mm-hmm. confident woman.
Yeah.
And if you never have that example, especially at middle school, I mean, my Lord, if we think about ourselves 11, 12, and 13 years old, we were experiencing any number of confusing and also probably problematic things for our parents. But to have a role model, this coach in Heather's situation, this coach that was giving her players that permission to grow into their best selves, there's nothing better than that.
Danielle Banyan is one of our guests today. She's an assistant coach for the Golden Gophers women's basketball team. And Mary Jo Kane is with us, director of the Tucker Center for Research for Girls and Women's Sport at the U of M. It's a conversation this morning about why fewer and fewer women are getting top coaching jobs and why so many men are moving into these jobs. The money is the lure. But what's happening is a lot of the hiring is still being done by men, and so fewer women are coming into these jobs. Mary Jo sharing with us that perception is they don't know the game, they don't have the coaching experience, they're not that interested. I'm out talking with our guests and with you this morning about why it matters that more women coach women's teams and men's teams, for that matter. I've been adding that, Mary Jo. I wonder what you think about that. What is the percentage of women who are coaching? It must be negligible, who are coaching professional or collegiate male teams.
Well, there are no women who are coaching at the head coaching position
really
professionally.
Okay.
But at the collegiate level, it's less than 2%, and it's always in individual sports. It's never in the power team sports like football, basketball, hockey. And that is one of the great ironies of Title IX. Not that Title IX was employment law, but you know, you heard so often the critics of Title IX say, hey, you know, we want women to play sports. Some of our best friends are female athletes, but it has really, really hurt men's athletics. Well, excuse me, with respect to a career, it has been a great dual career track for men, and it has absolutely not been that for women. So that's been an unintended and, frankly, devastating consequence for women because of Title IX.
Stephanie says on Twitter, our son and daughter play hockey, totally different at lower levels. My daughter does great with great coaches, but is the female coach role models that drive her forward? She's an 8-year-old goalie. Wow, go. To Megan in Duluth. Hi, Megan. How are you thinking about this?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Just to reiterate the previous caller in her comments, I've coached young women, I've coached adult women in different sports, and you can't be what you can't see. So just to build on those comments, I think that's so important. But one of the challenges that female coaches have, and I experienced this following Shannon Miller and her career up here at UMD, mm-hmm. and her very contentious battle with the university, is that strong women leaders are often criticized for that style and labeled a number of things that male coaches exhibit that are accepted. So they are held to different standards, and that is a problem too. And it's very frustrating for women coaches to experience.
Danielle, this makes complete sense, what Megan is saying, because again, it's the what does a leader and what does a coach look like? And we have some pretty narrow reference points for that, yes?
There are different standards, and I've experienced it personally,
and I've seen my peers
experience it. A simple example would be an instance where a new coach is hired at a university, maybe to repair and rehab a basketball program. Mm-hmm. Generally, a women's basketball coach is not able to do the same type of roster management as a men's basketball coach.
Tell me what that means.
It means that if you've come into a new opportunity and the roster is not healthy, or you have some student athletes on that roster that, whether behaviorally are not a fit, are probably not skilled enough to play in that at that level.
Mm-hmm.
In men's basketball, more often than not, they're given permission to make those necessary roster moves. In women's basketball, it does not happen that way.
So it's like, yes, I need to cut three people from this team, but there's going to be questions if a woman steps in and says, I got to do the hard work and cut some people off the team.
Correct.
And you've experienced that yourself.
Yes.
Mary Jo, where does that come from?
Well, again, as the caller Megan just alluded to, it has so much to do with gender role stereotypes, and not just in sports, but in the world writ large, that if you exhibit the kinds of behaviors and attitudes that we expect of a big-time coach who should be demanding, cutthroat in some cases, that you make whatever decisions you need to make for the good of the team, and if individuals' feelings get hurt, too bad. But if you engage in that kind of behavior, you often earn the name, you know, starts with a B, and we all know what that is.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes, and Danny would know this better than I, do you pull your punches? Are you very careful about who and what you say? And then the other thing is, unfortunately, we have data that show that when you ask young female athletes anonymously, would you rather have a male coach or a female coach? The higher you go up the food chain in terms of elite sports, the more likely the female athlete is likely to say, I want to have a male coach, because they have internalized all of the cultural messages about what a head coach and leadership means. And it's very, very driven by gender role stereotypes.
Danielle, Mary Jo just said, and it sounds like you've had this experience where you have to really do a gut check on how your behavior is going to be seen in a way that probably many male coaches do not have to do. Have you caught yourself, you know, making that equation, figuring that out?
You do have to do that. And I'll tell you my theory behind it. If we're talking about statistically most of these young women having male coaches for the majority of their lives, they're not comfortable the first time a woman is in that same role, especially if you look at the fact that a college coach who, now if you're playing scholarship basketball or scholarship athletics, that person is maybe the first person that has told you that's not good enough. There's someone else that's going to play ahead of you. You're not having as many opportunities to get it right in terms of performance. So you're not necessarily associating your experience with the fact that it's a higher level of competition. You're now looking at this woman coach that you've never interacted with, a woman coach making these decisions. You're looking at her as the person who's changing your experience of your sport, when really it's about the participation pyramid. It's about each level higher, it gets more and more competitive. So it's a really interesting paradox, because then now as a coach in college, I'm being careful not to come at that young lady in a way that makes her uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because I also know that she's adjusting to college in general, academically, socially, spiritually. And she's also now for the first time realizing that she's got room to grow, maybe. And I don't want her to lose what's actually happening in the fact that I'm the first woman that has held her to a high standard and maybe use my outside voice.
As an athlete, have you experienced this? Have you given some thought to this as a parent of kids that are participating in sports? How do you come to this conversation? I'd love to know. And what do you think about this idea that we touched on and we'll come back to, more women getting these top high-paying coaching jobs at the top colleges and also in the professional field? Why aren't more women doing those jobs? And it's not good enough to say because they haven't had a chance to do it, because this is the way it is. 651-227-6000, anywhere in our five-state area, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at CarrieMPR, where Jenny says, I've coached over 30 youth teams in the past 7 years because I think it's so important for girls to have strong female role models. In the last year or two, I've seen more moms stepping up to coach, and a Mike in Minneapolis. Hey, Mike, I know it's been a while. Thanks so much for waiting. Tell me how you come into this discussion.
Well, I'm the president of 612 Fast Pitch, a nonprofit community-based organization.
Good.
And in Fast Pitch, the board realized last year that we need to develop more female coaches. So we implemented a pilot program to bring some of our ex-players into the program. And we also worked this year with the Minnesota Twins to write a grant, part of their coaching grant program, specifically designed to bring in more female coaches. And this year we have 60% of our head coaches of the 10 teams are female, and we have on staffs, the female coaches outnumber our male coaches by 15-7. And not to say that we don't have great coaches of both sexes, but it is a priority for our organization. And our members do feel it's important for a lot of the reasons that are being brought up.
You know, Mike, I'm just to clarify for me, this is a league for, you said, Fast Pitch for girls. So it's all girl athletes, right?
That's correct. Yes, part of a local. Yep.
Okay, so I'm interested in what the board conversation sounded like when you said we still don't have enough women in these coaching. I mean, how did you get to the point where there were that few women that it had to become, you know, kind of the top priority of the board?
Well, I think if you look around, like you go to some coaching clinics, and I think in our sport, and this is anecdotally, you look around and there are a lot of dads that get engaged with their daughters and they coach. And so it there's a little bit of, you know, that was sort of a structural thing where you end up with a lot more male coaches in the field. And so you at the top levels in softball, I mean, there are tons of female head coaches, but you don't see it as much at the lower levels. So when you have a couple of good coaches come into your organization and you see the power that they have in terms of role modeling and, you know, how they approach problems and help the organization move forward, I mean, I think that's where the board said, look, this has to be a priority for us.
Yeah.
And it was easy to get everybody on board because you watch the games, you watch the practices, and you see it with your own eyes.
Mary Jo, what do you hear in that example?
Well, Mike makes the point that unless those who are in charge, and they're often always men, and thank you, Mike, for having this insight, not only the insight, but then following through, that unless you have male allies who understand the importance of bringing women in as not only as role models, but also because they're just great coaches, that without that level of outreach and awareness, you just are not going to have that happen. Because really, at the end of the day, and this is what I do worry about a lot, Carrie, is that, you know, we have a lot of coaching clinics, as he mentioned, mm-hmm. and I've spoken with Danny about this. But if the issue really here is power, that the reason that men moved into this, and it's not about men and women. It's whenever what had been a minority group becomes the majority group, they have power, and they're not going to let it go because the stakes are higher, the money's bigger. Mm-hmm. And so what I worry about is that we will have all of these coaching clinics and networks, and women will be all qualified up with no place to go. And that's what concerns me the most. So without a conscious effort of outreach on the part of women and then male allies, we're just not going to turn this trend around.
Got a call. Think about this, Danielle, while we get a look at the latest news. Alicia called from Hudson to say, I've noticed the women coaches have to work harder to be coaches and more trainings. For my middle school son, I'd prefer a woman's coach for my middle school son. Women are better trained. Not to discriminate on body size, they're better trained to help kids develop fundamental skills. Okay, Danielle, what have you thought about?
I think there is a pressure on women coaches to demonstrate competency because, again, if there's this disconnect between male athletic directors and their knowledge of capable female candidates, they have to, I guess, vet the candidates some way. And a woman generally, and I've experienced this as well in an interview process, I was sharing with friends that in an interview with an athletic director, I had to scheme on the board for him. And they were appalled because they perceived that I was the only person that needed to do that because the other two candidates were male. And the coaching circle is small, right? We all talk. And so then we were able to verify that of the three finalists, I was the only female, which was a non-issue for me because it was an opportunity. But of the three finalists, I was the only one that needed to demonstrate any capability.
That you knew what you were doing. Yeah.
So it happens. And to the caller's point, I do think that coaches in general, if you're coaching for the right reasons, you probably should be more inclusive. For example, she gave the point about not predetermining a person's ability based on body shape or body size. I think that should be a real consideration, but I do think when you've come from a perspective of the minority in the group that you are more open and inclusive when you're coaching or when you're doing anything. And so I'm glad that she's had that experience that women coaches maybe would not say that her son is too little to do this.
Shauna says on Twitter, after coaching 20 seasons of high school boys and girls tennis, the lack of trust and support from old male athletic directors and knowledgeable dads, in quotes, drove me to find a less contentious job. My emotional well-being couldn't stand the constant challenging of my decisions. I like that, knowledgeable dads. Yeah, no, I get this game because I'm a guy and I played it 20 years ago.
Right.
men often get the benefit of the doubt because they're men. And they're natural leaders and coaches.
And they're still, I hope this is changing, but probably still kind of the first perception of what an athlete, a really high-powered athlete looks like. I hope that's changing. You think it is, Danielle?
I think it is, slowly. One of the things I was going to mention when we're talking about dads coaching their daughters.
Yeah.
I have some college teammates who are now moms coaching their sons, and it's really cool. And it's important to note what that requires in the home, though. It requires my college teammate's husband or partner to take care of the other kids maybe more than he's accustomed to. So there's a role reversal that happens, and that's an example in youth sports. But then when you think about women coaches at the collegiate level, the same thing must happen. And so there's that family dynamic that comes into it
that's
as well.
That's a great point. Yep. Call here from Stacy in Minnetonka. Hi, Stacy.
Hey. Hi. Hello.
How do you come into the discussion?
Well, I tell you what, I have a coaching family. My husband's coached for over 30 years, and my daughter graduated in December and played tennis at UMD, had a great experience with her coaches. But in January, February, she was hired as the head boys tennis coach in Shakopee.
Well,
we're super proud of her. She's a young kid, just a going to develop to be a great coach. But the interesting thing is my husband now is her assistant coach. And you're talking about families. And, and I was nervous about this, but it has worked out beautifully. And in fact, today, my daughter's number one doubles team is at the state tournament.
All right.
So we're
it's
super
a big
proud
day.
Of her. We're very proud of her. But really, in the conference that she's in, she is the only female head coach.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And even at the state tournament banquet, she said, Mom, there was only one other female coach. So certainly, we respect and understand. But, in our family, it's about being the best coach you can be, supporting kids social, emotionally, and being there for them. And a good coach can be male or female. My husband has had a tremendously successful career coaching both boys and girls. It's all in the family at our house, but I'm so proud of my daughter that she's starting her coaching career and she's coaching boys.
I know.
She's doing
this
a terrific
is cool.
Job.
Hey, Stacy, I'm so glad you called. You heard the show on a big day in your family. So thank you for taking a minute to call in. Good to have you. Tiffany says on Twitter, my seventh grade girls started playing basketball in second grade with a female coach. She's had a mix of coaches, but when looking for her high school, we looked for a female coach who was the right fit with a high level of playing and coaching experience. Mary Jo, you and Danielle were telling me something off air in the break that, I mean, this kind of goes deep. I had no idea this was a thing. You say it's rarely talked about, and it's what you call negative recruiting. So what is it?
So negative recruiting involves sort of an implicit structural behavioral set of attitudes based really upon homophobia, which has long been linked to women's sports writ large. So this would be a specific example. I'm the head women's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin. Danny's the head women's coach at the University of Minnesota. Congratulations on your promotion, although we both love Lindsay Whalen.
Absolutely.
And we're both going after the same elite female athlete.
Okay.
I am married, not really in real life, but I am married and I am therefore assumed to be straight. Danny is maybe closeted, but people sort of know that she's gay. So I go into the home of that recruit and I say specifically to her parents, hey, you know, we would really love to have Janie come and be at the University of Wisconsin because we have the kind of culture that I think that she'd be really comfortable in. A lot of our head coaches in other sports and our assistant coaches are married and we get together and we have family weekends and we would really love to have Janie come. Now, I know that I would never use Danny's name. I know that we're in the running with the University of Minnesota. But, you know, there have been all kinds of rumors about what kind of program their coach fosters. And I just think your daughter might be more comfortable in the kind of family environment that we create.
And so Danielle would never know really that this negative recruitment is going on. But when you're walking in to do the recruiting, you're already at some disadvantage, some perceived disadvantage that isn't even based on truth.
Yeah, it can happen that way. And
women
that
are doing This is what kind of surprised me. Women are doing this to other women in the recruiting game.
Women are doing it to women.
And men.
Men are doing it to women.
Yeah. And recruitment is really what? One of the highest parts of being a coach at this level,
it's vital to your success. I mean, you can't coach a donkey to win the Kentucky Derby. And so, you know, you have to have players. And so Mary Jo makes a very valid point. This issue of negative recruiting is real. Mm-hmm. There are all types of code words mm-hmm. that people may use to imply something that would be maybe negative for some. Just about a week and a half ago, I had an interesting exchange with the mother of a recruit who asked, she was talking in code. She was talking in code. So she said, well, tell me about your team. How do you all manage intra-team dating? And so, okay, that's a great opportunity to share about our culture and to give this woman an opportunity to understand that we foster healthy opportunities in an environment for everyone to flourish and find her best self. But she's also then revealing mm-hmm. that that's maybe a concern for mm-hmm. her, and that's something that she's probably disclosing to all of the schools that are recruiting her daughter, and that then maybe some other schools maybe have mentioned something about our program or the next program. So that is a real concern.
Let me grab one last call here to Charlotte in Minneapolis. Hey, Charlotte, hi. Really appreciate you waiting. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Oh, thank you. I was calling because I feel like, I wanted to say I got coached growing up. I played basketball and a few mm-hmm. other things and had male coaches. And I feel like I didn't really stick with sports precisely because I just went through a program as an adult for physical fitness. And one of the coaches on the program openly said that he felt like women often lied about being assaulted, and now I have a daughter, and I worry that when she grows up, if that's a male coach's feeling, if something happens to her, she won't feel safe to disclose. So for me, having women as her coach is important for that reason, but also just in the culture in general to stop that so-called like locker room talk and act like it's acceptable.
And, and casual, what I'm sure that man thought, that male coach thought, was a casual observation.
Absolutely.
Does this, Mary Jo, does this make sense to you?
Oh yeah, it makes absolute sense. That you just, again, we go back to all these gender role stereotypes. And as one of the callers mentioned earlier, if you can't see it, you can't be it. Mm-hmm. And we just need to have more women. And I don't ever want to, by the way, leave the impression that I don't think men can't be and are great coaches. But that's not really the issue here that we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't want you to feel like you have to keep qualifying.
Yeah, exactly.
The conversation is what it is.
Thank you.
Really good to have you both here. Mary Jo, thank you. Danielle. Good conversation. I wanted to have it for a while. And you can continue to weigh in on the topic of discussion here on Twitter. It's @CarrieNPR.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.